The scripture says that this Omkar, it's like a needle that threads through every single scripture that you can think of. So just imagine the power of that Om. It's the mantra of mantras. So it transcends everything else. Before all the Vedas came, the Omkar was there. That's called the primary Veda. The first Veda that came was the Om. That's the Chandogya Upanishad says that. Okay, so very important when we chant it. You know, I've been telling everybody that chant it full with the full heart and listen to it, because that itself is a meditation. You don't need to do anything else.
Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavidvishabhai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Samasta Jana Kalyane Niratam Karunamayam, Namami Chinmayam Devam Sadgurum Brahma Vidvaram. Arunachala Shiva, Arunachala Shiva, Arunachala Shiva, Arunachala, 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 Arunachala, Arunachala. Bolo Sri Sadgurunath Maharaj ki jai.
So our subject today is going to be, how do you maintain a balance in life? And remember, you know, when we talk about balance, we are basically talking about dharma. Dharma is the correct word for balance. It's the more accurate, more precise definition for balance rather than balance. Balance is, it tells you something, but not the whole story. Okay, so let's ask ourselves, why is balance in life so important? First thing, of course, the answer is, I want to be happy. Happiness, first thing, okay. And therefore, to be happy, naturally, you have to maintain some kind of balance in life, right? Thomas Merton was a priest, and in the 1950s, he defined as happiness. Happiness is not a matter of intensity, but of balance, order, rhythm, and harmony. That was his definition. And, you know, if you look at nature, all of nature operates in a certain divine rhythm. So if you follow that, if you follow nature, and if you're in sync with nature, then you're in sync with balance. Then you're in balance. So understanding and falling in step with the rhythm of nature helps us maintain a balance with nature, helps us find the happiness that we seek. Okay. The greater the extent of the world you harmonize with, the outside world, the greater your balance. Okay. Now, when you say balance, it includes social, professional, physical, intellectual, emotional, mental, all this stuff. Okay. But we can break it down into three categories: intellectual, emotion, and spiritual. Those are the three broad-based backgrounds. Pujya Gurudev said very nicely, he said, we need to balance the head and the heart, the intellectual and the emotional components of our personality. Those have to come together. Otherwise, we have what is called an unintegrated personality. And when you have an unintegrated personality, you don't know what you're doing and, you know, you're going all over the place. It's like Sri Krishna's horse, five horses. If the horses have something going on with them, Jesus pulls you off the road, takes you off the road, takes you off your path. So once this happens, when you have intellectual and emotional balance together, the physical body follows the lead of the mind and intellect, because the mind and intellect is the thing that leads. In fact, you know, look at it this way. Even your physical body is a demand from the mind. The mind demands a certain physical body, and that's why that physical body comes to be in that life. So now, if the case is that the physical body follows the mind and intellect, we need to have an integrated mind and intellect. That means the head and the heart must be in sync, right? In fact, the true meaning of yoga translates into synchronization of the individual with the supreme, the individual Atman with the supreme Brahman, right? And yoga is that balance also. Okay, Sri Krishna says that in chapter 2 of your Bhagavad Gita, right? And he says, Yogastha kuru karmani sangam tyaktva dhananjaya siddhya siddhyo sabhavutva samatvam yoga ujjate. Samatvam means equanimity of mind. Equanimity of mind is equipoise, same thing. See, if you look at a simple pendulum and I take it and I pull the pendulum bob to one side, it tends to go this way. It won't stay here. It doesn't want to stay here, but it won't stay in the middle. Why do you think it wants to stay in the middle? You might say, oh, that's the most comfortable place. Yes, it is. But there are physical laws. The reason it stays in the middle is because the potential energy of that thing, okay, the potential energy of the physical of that bob is the smallest here. Because when you take this bob above this and you look at the, where the minimum point is, the height above the minimum is what is defined as potential energy. And every object tends to seek minimum potential energy. So this distance has to be as small as possible. So it wants to go at the middle. The middle is where it's zero. So just like a pendulum has that minimum potential energy, so too we have a minimum potential thing. And that is called equipoise. That's what we're talking about. Okay, same thing like a pendulum. So a human being also wants that. So nature provides us with a variety of examples to convince us that harmonizing with nature gives balance and therefore happiness. Okay, so let's just look at some of these things here. Learning balance in nature. Each power in nature does its harmony thing, and so there is perfect balance. The sun gives us heat and light. Ecocycle created everything else, right? And the water in the ocean is distilled, it goes into the formation of clouds, and again that comes down as rain, and so on. The whole cycle goes on like clockwork. And then we go and get Aquafina, Arrowhead, all that stuff, and we drink all that good stuff, not understanding that, hey, this is the power of nature that's helping you with all this, okay? You're getting all this because of that. Now, even animals do their thing, working together in this harmony. If you look at ants, bees, all of them work in harmony. The ants, you know, they will go, they work, they carry one leaf so much, you know, it's such a, you think, oh, it's just a small leaf, big deal. But it is a big deal for them because they are carrying so many times their weight and they carry one leaf to make that nest. You know, they're very meticulous in what they do, and they're together in what they do. This is what Gurudev also taught, to be together in what you do and to be meticulous in everything that you do. You will see if every action that Gurudev did, even when he spoke, it was a meticulous action. Everything. Whenever he took out his handkerchief, he would do it, wipe his nose nicely, put it back. You and I will just take it. So that is the difference. So a master is present at all times. The There's no moment where he's absent. Okay. So the animals do this thing. Now, you know, there is a very nice song which Guruji composed, Tejo Mayananda. And this is, I'll tell you the contents of this. I won't sing the whole song. It's called Vishwam Eva Guru. It goes like Vishwam Gurur Mama Sakalam Vishwam Gurur Mama. You learn it afterwards. Okay. But so what does this mean? It's saying that the entire universe is my teacher. And how? This is showing you the beauty of nature, how nature balances in itself. So, and then he says, space is generous. It allows accommodation. It allows the air to occupy it. At the same time, it's detached from that. It doesn't care whether the quality of the air is good or bad. Space allows its accommodation. Not only that. And it's unattached at the same time. And then fire, it's brilliant and it rises up. If fire didn't rise up, you wouldn't be able to cook anything. Right? Look at that. You know, we take things for granted. We understand how much nature is doing. Okay. And then the nourishment provided by Mother Earth, and whoever tolerates or whatever things you do on it, good things, bad things, terrible things, all kinds of wars and so many things are taking place. But poor Mother Earth tolerates. And that is why it's called Mother Earth, not Father Earth. Mother gives and gives and gives. Okay. That is a spirit of sacrifice. Okay. Then we get vigor from the light of the sun and the moon. And the moon delights the mind. All these things are there. And then the trees, the rivers, the cows, all these things serve all of humanity. Okay. Throughout their lives. And so the song finishes by saying, may my mind be enriched in love for all the people and ever remain in their service. So it is saying that we ourselves should be like that. Follow the lead of nature. So now what about balance in a human being? How does that go? Now, not realizing that the privilege of a human being comes with great responsibility to follow this wheel of balance, humans transgress this harmony that exists. Okay. The great spiritual master, Adi Shankaracharya, you know, Viveka Chudamani, everybody knows about that, right? So, in that book, he says, how a human birth is precious, happens only out of divine grace. To be born with a thirst for the scripture, to follow this path is another blessing. To be able to discriminate between those qualities that move you towards your spiritual path and take you away from it, that is another blessing. Okay, look at the number of blessings. I'm going on adding these things. Okay, and to be finally established in the truth and to have a desire for liberation, that's another great blessing. So Adi Shankaracharya says, human birth, a desire for liberation from the BMI or knowing one's spiritual essence, and finally the company of saints and sages, all that is a great blessing from God. However, not aware of this fact, what happens? You know, human beings consider themselves finite and identify with this body, mind, intellect, as you know, Vedanta class, right? So they identify with the body, mind, intellect, and this is the starting point of what we call the ego. Whenever you identify, you know, see, just imagine, ego, that's why it's called an ego notion. It's just a notion. And we believe that notion. We make it so real. It's amazing. Okay, this is the starting point of the ego. So, and what comes with it? Jealousy, self-centeredness, selfishness, all these things come together. So a person's ego arises, in spite of Shankaracharya giving us this warning, and they violate the balance in the universe and they destroy themselves. See, this is how everything goes off balance. The mind and intellect are not in sync. They are not integrated. Why is that? Because you don't know that your nature is spiritual. So you identify with this physical body, as you're so many times familiar with these words, you identify with this physical body and think you're this body, so everything is a physical body. Therefore, I must do what I want for this unit, not caring about the rest of the world. Okay. So this problem, so the I and the mind arise from this limited perception. And this is why we call doership and ownership. So we take doership and ownership of the action and take all the penalties and everything that go with it. And we keep repeating that again and again. In chapter 2, Lord Krishna warns Arjuna about this. And he says that, you know, there's a very beautiful shloka on the management of anger. He says that whenever you look at an object, dhyayato vishayan pumsah. When I see an object or a person, sangasteshu bajayate, an attachment to that comes together. Because I'm looking at that and say, oh, yeah, that looks good. It should be mine. And finally, what you do, you make it yours mentally. Okay. So what it says, sangaj sanjayate kamaha. So the attachment becomes a desire, a obsessive desire to possess that object or that person. If it is a person, you're in trouble. A lot of trouble. If it's an object also, you're in trouble. Okay. So kamat krodho vijayate. So and when this attachment, so much of that obsessive desire to possess comes in, and somebody comes in and thwarts that, you know, takes that desire and thoughts and comes in between you and that object or that person, anger comes up. Because there's so much of energy built up with the desire, that desire takes the form of anger. Just like, you know, a bullet is converted from kinetic energy to potential energy. It just hits something and finish, that something is destroyed. Okay, just like that, this anger, the energy of anger inside, I mean, this anger, the energy of desire is converted into anger. Kamat krodho vijayate. Krodhat bhavati sammohaha. What does that mean? That means the moment that anger comes in, I have forgotten my identity as a human being. As a human being, I'm supposed to be able to think and say, what am I doing? Why am I getting angry for this silly little thing? I should stop do that. But I don't do that. I go past that. So kamat krodho vijayate, krodhat bhavati sammohaha. Sammoha means I forgot the memory that I am a human being. There's instant, what should call it? Alzheimer's. Instant Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's open, but this is terrible. So it occurs immediately. Kamat krodhat bhavati sammoha spriti vibramaha. Spriti vibramaha means I'm confused as to what my action should be. And spriti bramshat buddhi nashat. Spriti bramshat buddhi nashat pranashyati. So he's saying that, and the moment my mind is confused as to who I am, my intellect is also overwhelmed. When the intellect is overwhelmed, Bhagavan Krishna is telling Arjuna, you're as good as gone. Because you came here as a human being, I gave you an intellect and you use that intellect and you misuse that intellect. An intellect that is such a precious thing for a human being. With all these things that I told you about how Shankaracharya says about all these different things. So if you lose that, then you lost as a human being. So that's why Bhagavan Krishna says, buddhi nashat pranashyati. Such a person is destroyed. Destroyed means what? That means you lost your human birth. You don't desire to be a human birth. You might be born by God's compassion that as a human being again, but certainly you've lost something. Okay, so this is the thing. So when he warns about this, again in chapter 3, Lord Krishna tells us how nature maintains his balance, this wheel of harmony that goes on. You know, like I was telling you, the eco cycle, everything in nature does that. You know, you notice that. And the Lord himself adheres to it. All of nature, the sun, everything, all these objects. But a human being doesn't do it. Why is it? Because all the other things don't have ego. They don't have ownership. They don't have the I-ness and my. I and my things don't come into the picture. You know, so when the ego is not present, see, God percolates through everybody. Brahman is percolating. The consciousness is in and through everybody. Right? Only thing is, you are putting an impediment in the way, which in terms of your ego. When you put that impediment, then it's hard for it to go. It's like saying, Sri Krishna plays the flute. Supposing that flute is hollow, then the tune of the Lord will play through nicely. But if the flute has some foreign matter, it's not going to play. The foreign matter is your ego. See that? So that is a symbolic thing, you know, even when Sri Krishna plays the flute. So understand that we are a flute in the hands of the Lord, but that flute must be emptied of all its ego. Then it's only then can the Lord play through. Okay. See, that's why the animals, everybody, all of them go according to the plan of nature. They don't violate it, but we do. Why do we violate? Because we have free will. And the free will is supposed to be a blessing for you to move it in the right direction. But if you don't do it, then you violate everything. So harmony is violated, balance is gone. Human being loses balance. Okay, so the head and heart are not integrated. So everything. So as I told you, all of nature does this. And in chapter 2, Lord Krishna tells Arjuna that how do you do your duty in a way that your ego does not exercise itself. He gives a very beautiful thing. He says, Yogastha kuru karmani sangam tyaktva dhananjaya siddhya siddhyo samobhutva samatvam yoga uchite. So samatvam means equanimity of mind. So what is he saying in the end? Samatvam yoga uchate. That means samatvam means equanimity of mind. That's where he's going. Now what is this? How do you get this equanimity of mind? Yogastha kuru karmani. So perform yoga. In what? In battle. How do you do that? That's called karma yoga. Okay, and see, remember, Arjuna is only on the battlefield, but we are also on the battlefield of life. So symbolically, we have a lot of thoughts in our mind, and we have conflicting thoughts, and that is our battlefield. So we have to choose correctly. And when we align our thoughts correctly, when the head and the heart are integrated properly, then you make the right choices. Okay, so here he's saying, Arjuna, do your duty without attachment. It says yogastha kuru karmani sangam tyaktva, giving up this attachment. Same thing with anger. You know, as I told you just now, if you give up that object you went on a wool gathering mission of that object, and you went on saying, oh, it'll be nice if it looks in my house, it'll be nicer. Oh yeah, it'll look good. How can it look nice in anybody else's house? And then you started making a big story yourself. And you made it yours in your mind so much. Okay. So to hear, whenever you fight, Bhagavan Krishna told Arjuna, just fight. Don't worry about anything else. You know, Nike has just do it. They do it for something else, but we should also just do it. Okay, so but we don't. We think, oh, what will I get out of it? This dialogue goes on us. Okay. So when a task is done in this way, without attachment, not worrying about the success or the failure of the job, right? You know, what did Gurudev say? The success, the race, the success is not in the race run, not in the trophy won, but in the race run, right? So it's how you do things. It is the process itself that is the beauty. That is where the presence and the process is what makes us go. That's what we should concentrate on rather than the fruits. So that is what balance. So yoga is the correct definition of balance, equipoise of mind. In fact, the word yoga, it means what? It's linking the individual spirit with the supreme. That's what yoga means. Okay. That's why he says, see, that's why equanimity goes hand in hand with that. Why? Because if you are linked to the supreme, definitely your mind is going to be equanimous. There's no question. Isn't it? So that's why he says yoga is equanimity of mind, right? And yoga, and you know, any one of these yogas, bhakti yoga, karma yoga, jnana yoga, all these things are methods of linking the individuality to the supreme in either of those ways, as bhakti, as jnanam, as karma yoga, whatever, through action, through knowledge, through devotion, all these three ways, right? Okay, now, so when you reach that state, that is the acme of balance. Okay, you want to reach that state. So the word, now, I told you the better word for balance is dharma, not balance. Balance is just, but dharma, look at the word dharma. How is dharma is a state of being. Being is what you are. Being is what God really is. You notice I said is, that's a state of being. The moment I say is, it's a state of being. So the state of being is what dharma is, right? And the one concept that links all our activities together and give meaning to them is dharma, right? Hence, to maintain balance, we need to maintain dharma in our life. Okay, so I'm going to get off the word balance and go to the word dharma. Okay, because you understand that it's the same thing, but it's in fact, it's more descriptive than balance. Okay, so dharma is law of being. Dharma refers to a spiritual essence and when you do this, when you understand that, understand your spiritual essence, and you do all your actions with that kind of mindset, all your actions will be automatically balanced. Right? As we said, right? So, since my actions are in harmony with all beings, there is minimum stress in my life. isn't it? Because whenever you do that, naturally you're in harmony with everything. Therefore, in all social, professional, intellectual, mental, physical activities, all this, if I abide in my divine nature and I do that activity with that kind of idea, with that mind, mental makeup, then all our actions become balanced and I get the most out of life. Now, the actions that you do on an individual basis, as you know, are called swadharma. Swadharma means individual dharma. That means as a mother, as a father, as a software engineer, as a doctor, all those things, if I do that meticulously, if I do it just like Gurudev, you see, Gurudev is a walking example of that. Whether he's sitting, walking, doing, just like a sthita prajna. Take the definition of sthita prajna from Bhagavad Gita and you put it on Gurudev and you'll see it superimposes exactly. there's no deviation. How does he sit? How does he walk? How does he talk? All these things are the example is what Gurudev is. Okay. So when you bring all your individual dharmic things as a software engineer, as a doctor, as a husband, as a wife, all that. If you take all that and do all those things meticulously and as perfectly as you can, then you're aligning yourself in the direction of being, of dharma. See that? That is the reason why you do it. That is why swadharma is so important. It is, you need to move the swadharma towards dharma. And when you move swadharma towards dharma, you're doing, the action becomes pure. That means you're understanding that I'm doing it with the idea that my nature is divine and the nature of whoever that action applies to, whoever is the person that I'm talking to or whatever, or even that person is also divine. I keep that in my mind all the time. Okay. So therefore, our individual actions are known as swadharma, and we need to make sure our swadharma is aligned with dharma. Okay. Now, what is the context in balance in work? We spend a considerable time work in our daily routine. Work done as a chore can become dull and uninteresting, and will get us nowhere in our ultimate goal. It becomes mere karma. You know, you don't want to do karma, big deal. What is karma? Just action. You don't get nothing, you know. But if you do it as a yoga, just you see the difference, karma yoga. You know, Ramana Maharshi, very beautifully, he says in Upadeshasaram, he says, Kriti maho dadau patana karanam phalam ashashvatam gati nirodhakam. He's saying that if you do this piecemeal work, you do an action to get a result. You're not getting anywhere. He's saying all you're doing, you're getting the result each time. And each time you got the result, and the reason you're repeating that action is back because you want that result. And the moment you say you want that result, it's become a hang up on you. You're hung up on that result. That means you cannot. And what is hang up? Vasana. Isn't it? So you don't want to be that. So what is he saying? He's saying do your actions with the other attitude. What is the other attitude? Ishwararpitam nechayakritam chitta shodakam mukti sadakam. He's saying that do it with the dedication towards the Lord. Understanding that you are that being. Okay. And moving towards the state of being. When you do an action with that, then every action of yours becomes a meditation itself. Because you are present in every action. The moment presence comes into every action, it already becomes divine. Isn't it? Because, you know, you're no longer the robot. The God in you is doing the action. And the moment you do it meticulously, the God in you is watching the robotic you. Okay? Never. See, the problem is we behave like robots. We run our life like robots. And that's the problem. You must remember that my nature is divine and I must watch the robotic me and program it in the right direction. You know, see in the space program, I used to work at Boeing. So, you know, when they have a guidance system and there's a target that you're going to hit in space, the rocket that you're sending from here or missile, whatever it is, I don't want to talk about those things, but anyway, but it's a good example here. So, when you send that out into space, you're targeting it for that thing. And the computer has all the alignment, everything else, so that it hits a target so many millions of miles in space. 235 million, 1,000 miles, whatever it is. And it's set to go. But you know, on the way, if there is a comet or something that suddenly whizzes by, it moves, it loses its trajectory because the gravitational forces move it off. And when it moves it off, the computer immediately says, you can't go there. Come back. And it brings it back to alignment and hits it. You know? So you and I are computers. This robotic you is the you and I are programmers. The robotic you is the computer. So never forget, you can always program your life. This is what you're doing. Okay. So programming, therefore, when you do things in this spirit, Karma Yoga puts balance in your life and puts enthusiasm in your work. Because you're doing it with so much of gusto. You know, see, I'm telling you, you don't need to just go sit in the puja room to do prayer. Everything you do is a puja in your house. Whether you're washing the vessels, whether you're washing your vessels in the sink, whether you're setting the table, or whether you're doing something for somebody, talking to somebody, everything can be a prayer. Because you must be present. Main thing is presence, presence, presence. Your presence shows that the divinity in you is being expressed. Right? And that's the purpose of life. Purpose of life is to express your divinity, not by showing people that I am divine, not saying that, but doing it. Just do it. Walk, what's it going to say? Walk the talk. Don't just talk, walk the talk. That's what you do, okay? Therefore, let us understand what is meant by Karma Yoga. Actions done without anxiety for the fruits or results. You know all these things. Actions done with Prasada Buddhi or Ishwara Arpana Buddhi. What does that mean? That means I am doing this for my Gurudev, or I am doing it for the Lord, and therefore it shall be done in the most beautiful way that I can. So the action becomes perfect. You know, Gurudev had that. You know, he saw somebody, you know, when they were setting up the puja, and they keep all these lamps, you know, he wants everything in a line. If he sees something out of line, he said, "Who did that?" And he'll catch him and make him realign all those lamps. Meticulous in every way. Not one little thing, you know, because it's God. God is talking, nobody else. So God knows. So therefore, you know, that kind of philosophy should come into our life, that action, okay? And so actions done without anxiety for fruits. Actions done with Ishwara Arpana Buddhi. Ishwara means, that means I'm doing it for the Lord. Notice that when actions are done in a spirit of surrender to the eternal, the stress is out of your hands. Why? Because you are no longer the doer. You are no longer the enjoyer. God is the doer and the enjoyer. So give it to him. Leave it to him. Why do you worry about it? Right? But sometimes we will never do that. Oh no, but I'm a little worried about it. I'm still worried. See, that is why surrender is so difficult. You know, everybody says, yeah, acceptance and surrender, great values. Yes, but not so easy to do. But that is what it takes, ultimately. So all these techniques that you do, karma, bhakti, jnana, all these are to finally bring you into a state of acceptance and surrender. Okay, such actions are done with detachment. You know that you can only attach to something higher and let go of the lower. So that's how you should work. Okay, working in the spirit of yoga is a dharmic concept. Therefore, it provides us with the element of balance in our life. So in work, this is the way to get balance. Okay. Now, dharma is also the essence of karma yoga. Now, let us understand the importance of dharma in our life. Okay. Now, let us look at some of these things. Dharma, swadharma, I already told you. It says dharma protects the protector. That means if you follow dharma, the dharma will protect you. If you do things right, then everything will protect you. If you don't pollute nature and you do all those things, nature will protect you in the same way. Right? Whereas if you do it, then you have to bear the brunt of what comes. Okay? It should come very naturally to us. Can't pollute just like that. So dharma is also a mind purifier. It gains from living, you have a lot of gains from living a dharmic life. The aspect of dharma to focus on in youth. What are we doing, going to do there? Okay? Youth means even now. Don't think you're all old here. We're all still young. Okay, so what does this say? Dharma protects his protector. See, there are some very nice beautiful slokas. I'm going to read them and I'll explain the meaning. Dharma eva hato hanti dharmo rakshati rakshitaha tasma dharmo na hantavya mano dharmo hato vadit. This is from the Manu Smriti. You know, Manu gave a lot of laws. He was the law giver. He was one of the lawgivers in the entire, events that took place in many, many billions and billions of years ago. Okay, and this money, he gave these laws, and you know, his job was to do this. So his law is that he's saying, dharma eva hato hanti. Dharma only destroys those that destroy it. That means if you contradict, if you pollute, you will get something back, definitely. Either from people who watch you doing it, or somewhere else, or something that you do will also. In other words, your karma will catch up with you. Don't think you just, oh yeah, you got away with it. You can never get away with it. Nothing you can get away with. Okay. Then dharma rakshati rakshitaha. The dharma protects those that protect it. Tasma dharma na hantavya. Therefore, dharma should not be destroyed. That means you must follow dharma. Don't go contrary to it. That's what it's saying. Mano dharmo hato vadit. Dharma, so dharma that is, so again he's repeating, the dharma that is destroyed destroys you. So don't become adharmic. Stay according to the wheel of nature. Stay in harmony with everything in nature. So therefore live a dharmic life. Okay. Now, you know, there's a very beautiful story from Shankaracharya. He's saying that Shankaracharya was walking and he saw an old man. He was, you know, he was bent down like this. And a coconut tree, tall coconut tree, bent itself to give the coconut to him. Really, the coconut, he didn't even have to go like that. He came, it was right near his hand. He could just pluck it and take it. And then so Shankaracharya's shishyas, his disciples, and all the acharyas who came with him, asked him, what is going on here? You know, it's terrible. How can this happen? Shankaracharya said, so he asked the old man, what happened? He says, Swami, all my life I have lived by selling the juice of this coconut, the sura, and that I get from this talavuksha. Talavuksha means coconut tree. This is my swadharma. This is what I do. That means that's his way he makes a living. Now, though my associates left this job and took other jobs, I never left it. And because I never left it, this talavuksha never left me. I didn't leave the coconut tree, so coconut tree is not leaving me. I always did everything I could for it, but the coconut tree is doing the thing. So now he's saying, now being old, I can no longer climb and collect sura and sell it. So the tree by itself is bending and giving its sura to me. What a nice thing. Since I never left my swadharma, it is only saving me, pointing to the vrida. Adi Shankara told his shishyas, is there a greater example of dharma rakshati rakshitaha? See, it's a Shankaracharya story. Very nice. Then, why is dharma important? You know, you see in the Mahabharata, there's another thing. It says, dharana dharma itya ahu dharma dharayati praja yasya dharana samyuktaha sadharma iti nischayaha dharana dharma itya ahur. What is the meaning of that? If I say something in Sanskrit, I will tell you the meaning. I will not just this by guaranteed because I need to understand it myself. Okay, so dharana dharma iti ahur, that means dharma is for the stability of society needs to be stable, and dharma is there. You know, just imagine if you do your duty and everybody did their duty, wouldn't there be stability in society? That's not happening, I agree, but there will be a lot of stability in society the more everybody does their duty. Dharma dharayati prajaha, the maintenance of social order and general well-being and progress of humankind. That's what will happen. Okay. So the maintenance of social order and general well-being of everybody and the progress of humankind. Yasya dharana samyukta sadharma iti nischayaha. The nischaya means for certain. What is certain? Sadharma iti. He's saying, whatever conduces, yasya dharana samyukta, everything that conduces to the fulfillment of all these things that he has said is called dharma. That which gives you general well-being, that which is contributes to the progress of humankind, that which contributes to the stability of society, all these that we talk, all these things are called dharma. Okay? And we must live by dharma. Why? Because look at our culture itself is called Sanatana Dharma. It's right. That's the way it is. So dharma is the law of being, and abiding in it really makes you. You know, Sri Rama is a very great example of dharma. In fact, in M.S. Subbalakshmi's version, she sings, dharma stapana tatpara ram. That means Sri Rama is the very anchor. Stapana means firm. Just like Stitta Prajna. Here, this is Sthapana means it's a firm, he has a firm hold on Dharma, Sri Rama. That means he's never done anything adharmic. Okay? Now, so then the other thing here. Dharma is the purest form of food. He says, the wise do not think about food, but reflect on Dharma alone. For they know that food for beings is born along with them. See, the realization that human birth is a rare commodity which comes as a blessing for beings to work towards salvation is achieved through reflecting on Dharma and Dharma alone. He's saying that Dharma is the purest form of food, not the food that you eat. This is food for the soul that you need. That's what he's saying. Okay? Because when you reflect on these things, that's what takes you there. Remember, food for thought should not be forgotten in the process of acquiring food for the body. And that's the point. Okay. Then the next thing. The power of Dharma to purify the mind. What does it say? Dharma shatova dharma drishtova pratova kathita piva sambaditova punavanati purusham sada rajendra dharma shrutova drishtova smritova kathitopiva samvidotava. Okay, I don't know how to chant it, but punati purusham sada. Okay, here, what does this mean? He's saying that dharma shrutova drishtova smritova kathitopiva sambavaditova. That means dharma, whether it's listened to, shrutova means listening to, right? If you listen to something that is dharmic, or drishtova, if you see something that is dharmic, or smritova, if you think about something that is dharmic, kathitova, or you speak of something that is dharmic, or samvaditova, something that is approved of, all this spoken of. When you do all this, what happens? Punati purusham sada cleanses a person. So whatever you do that is dharmic, seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, whatever you do, all that is dharmic that you do, cleanses a person thoroughly. Cleanses the mind and the intellect, because that's what we need, you know, as Vedanta students, we should know that cleansing the mind and intellect is of prime importance, because a pure intellect is where the God resides, nothing else, right? You can't see anything, you can't see the self, you can't visualize the self with anything but a pure intellect. It's not like you can't see the sunlight just directly. You have to look at the reflection, right? Or you take a piece of that glass and whatever it is and look through a smoky glass, right? But you can't see it directly. So to the self, you cannot see it directly. It is only through the reflection of that through your intellect. Therefore, your intellect better be pure. Otherwise, it will reflect what you are. You see, it picks up whatever you have. See, this is the reason why the rishis, you know, the way we got our culture, which is called Veda, it came from the rishis because their minds were pure. Their minds were pure. Therefore, the broadcast from the Lord came through them undistorted. The undistorted broadcast came from the Lord, and through their undistorted mind, it was rebroadcast to us. See? That's the difference. But if you don't have the pure mind, you'll see something that you are not. You'll see only the color. You know, there was a great saint in southern India, and he had, you know, he was giving prasad, you know, he was giving candy, this
sugar candy.
Sugar candy is colorless. You've seen that, right? You all had it, I'm sure, in all our yatras and all that. So the sugar candy, the Mahatma in there, he's a Raghavendra Swami. He's a great Mahatma in the south. So he had that in his hand, and he was giving prasad to everybody. And untouchable, in those times they were untouchable guys. You know? So the untouchable was standing outside because he couldn't enter the temple. The priest would not allow him to enter. But this Raghavendra Swami called him, come. And the priest looked at him like that. You know, he had a glaring look. So he took the prasad, he took that and gave it to him, and he took it and went. And the priest came. Priest had such a terrible look on his face because he thought a great crime was done here. So he came inside and he asked for prasadam. When he gave him the prasad, it was black. The candy turned black. Then he said, "What is this? How come?" He said, "That's the color of your mind." See, that's the thing. So what you think is what you get. Then he really repented for it and he said, please give me the prasadam again. He said, there's no need. Open your hand, and it was back to the natural thing. See, so when you let go of those things, you know, those are all petty things. So this is what it's trying to tell you. All right, then the other thing, it says that when life is full of uncertainty, there is no time which is unfavorable for living life as per dharma. That means do it right now. Don't say, oh, I'll retire and then do dharmic stuff. You may not even get a chance. I hope you get, but I'm sure. But you have to do it now. There's no question like now. Okay, just do it. That's what I said. So there's no definite. The life is full of uncertainty. Therefore, you should do it whenever you get a chance. Grihit eva kesheshu mrityuna dharma maacharet. Think as if death is within its reach to follow you and then follow dharma. That means that it's running after you. And therefore, do it right now. Don't say, you know, wait. There's no time to wait. Right now, it says. Okay. And then he says, what do you gain from living a dharmic life? He says that by paying heed to dharma, one understands. Shrutva dharman vijanati. Then, shrutva tyajati dharma mitam. By hearing dharma, one quits one's bad disposition. See? Shrutva jnanam avapnoti. By comprehending dharma, one attains knowledge. See? So, these are the benefits. By hearing dharma, you quit your bad disposition. By understanding dharma, you gain knowledge. And by listening to dharma, you gain moksha. That means you gain liberation. Right? These are the things. See how many good things are there. To understand life as life's essence, you must follow the path of dharma. So, by talking and hearing about dharma, one's thoughts and dispositions get cleaned. Evil intentions, basal instincts, all these things get crushed. And when dharma is understood and assimilated, you attain knowledge. You know, that's why you feel good. When you do something really compassionate and you don't want anything for it, you just feel good. Because that's your nature. Your nature is that and you're feeling that. So the bliss that is your own nature is coming out, is manifesting in that way. That's why you feel good. Okay. So then the other thing is here. Therefore, whatever aspect of dharma should you focus on during any time in your life, as long as the body is healthy, as long as death is far away, do deeds beneficial for the soul. What can one do at the end of life? He's saying that don't delay. That's the point. Don't delay saying, you know, I'll wait and then do the dharmic activity. See how many times it's emphasized, okay? These are from different, I'm talking about different scriptures. From different Mahabharata and so on, okay? Different things. During childhood, youth humans have different priorities. Alas, even when one is in the jaws of death, one does not think of the Lord. You know, Bhajagovindam says that. Bhajagovindam says, Shankaracharya says, that, you know, at last, you know, when you're young, you do this. When you're young and all that, you know, when you're a teenager, you have certain likes and dislikes. When you're a youth, you have a certain likes and dislikes. When you're old, you're so old, you have disease and everything else coming to you. And so where is the time to think of God? When are you thinking of God? What about dharma? What about Brahman? You can't afford to do that. So that's what he's saying. Again, same thing. He's putting the same point across. Engage in karma yoga, selfless activity now. Don't delay. You know, and very nice, beautiful thing. You know, remember Shankaracharya, again, Bhajagovindam. He talks about a lotus petal in water. Nalani dalakata jalamati taralam tadva jivitam atishaya chapalam vidhivyada vimana grastam lokam shokam atam chasavastam. He's saying that, you know, life is like a lotus petal in the water. And there's a bunch of water on top of that petal. And that water, anytime the wind can blow, and it's precariously balanced on that petal. So if the wind blows, the thing can just go. He's saying that is how precarious your life is. Anytime it can go. Don't wait for it to fall like that. Now is the time to do everything. Shankaracharya warns so many times in Vivek Chudamani, in Bhajagovindam, life is like a dewdrop on a lotus petal. Many times. So don't be like that dewdrop. See, supposing you know that I am not the drop on the top, I am the drop, I am the water here. So I'm not, then no problem. But right now we already misunderstood ourselves to be that. Right? Because of our ego, because of our attachment, and because of our ego, because of our I notion, we already thought ourselves to be this thing here. So what happens? So therefore, do something about it. Don't say, well, how did I get here? There's no use. You know, as I said, if your house is on fire, you don't stand and say, how did my house catch fire? You do that? You go and put it out. So here too, there's an urgency in putting out the fire of this, what shall I say, ajnana or avidya, fire of ignorance. You need to put it out. And that's what he's talking about. Okay, see, so one of the first things, one of the very, very, very nice value that has to go with dharma is called ahimsa. Ahimsa means non-violence. Non-violence in thought, word and action. Anything that involves ahimsa is decidedly deemed dharma. Dharma has been expounded, elucidated, so that there is no violence among beings. Ahimsa should be practiced in thought, word and action. See, in fact, there's a sloka in Sanskrit which says, ahimso, ahimsa paramo dharma. That means ahimsa is the first dharmic thing that you can do. That means practice non-violence in thought, word and deed. Don't think bad of somebody. Don't think ill of somebody. Don't speak bad language to somebody. And don't destroy somebody's life. And don't do violent things. All these, okay, comes under that. Then the other thing. So here, he's saying, Nityam krodha tapo rakshet. Always protect penance from anger. That means don't let your anger get in the way of your meditation. Penance, that's what he's talking about. Dharma rakshacha matsarat. Save righteousness from jealousy. Matsara means jealous. Don't let jealousy get the better of you. Okay. Understand that dharma comes first. I don't care. There's jealousy and all that is second. Then vidya mana apavano abhya. Defend knowledge from the clutches of pride and contempt. Okay. See, these are all very, very great advice given by these books. Atmanta pramadata. Protect oneself from misdeeds. So now what are these examples? For example, sage Vishwamitra. Sage Vishwamitra, you look at the life of that sage. Sage Vishwamitra was, he was a king. He was a great royal person. And he went out to battle, right? And many times he won victories. And at one stage, what happened was, as he was coming back, all the soldiers were tired. And when they came, they passed by Sage Vasishtha's ashram. Sage Vasishtha was already a Brahmagnani. That means he won't realize the truth. He knows the truth and he knows who he is. He has reached that state of being. Okay. Now, so they walked there and immediately Vasishtha knew he was coming. So he sent his disciples to receive all those soldiers, sit down there and eat something because he knew they were all hungry. And they all sat down and ate. After they ate, he was very pleased. Oh, wow. The sage gave me all these things. Very, very good. Then he started thinking. And that is what made the problem. So what did he think? He said, oh, what is this? This sage is staying alone in an ashram here. I am a king and I'm going all over the place. And he was wondering, first he asked the sage, how can you, because see, the moment these soldiers finish their food, again, he said, oh, they're still hungry. He said, no problem. And he just willed something in his mind and again, plates and food, everything appeared again. Then Vishwamitra started wondering, how come the sage is able to do that? He's saying, this sage is only sitting in an ashram. I have a whole country to rule. I should be the one with that power, not him. So, and the sage was getting it from a divine cow that was gifted to him. Okay, see, the story is so important. Okay, so Vishwamitra, so this divine cow, the wish-fulfilling cow, that's what they call it. It's called Kamadu. So this wish-fulfilling Kamadu, and this wish-fulfilling cow was able to put the plates again. So again, again and again, they had number of servings. So they were very, very happy. But Vishwamitra started thinking, why is this, how is this happening? And he went and asked the sage, how come you're able to do this? He's saying, no, because he told him the truth. There's nothing to lie about. So he said, how about if you give me that cow and I'll give you so much of, I'll give you all my country, land and everything else. He said, no, can't do that. Two sages challenging each other. Huh? One is a monarch and one is a Brahmarishi. Just imagine. So he said, no, if you don't give it to me, I'll take it. He said, go ahead. Do your best. So he tried and he tried. And then first he thought he could win. But then Sage Vasishtha was able to, through his power, he was able to combat all the armies, however many people they sent, he was able to push them back. So he came back, he was defeated and he felt very bad. So he told him, okay, what is the secret of your success? How come you beat me and how come you are so successful? He said, you become a Brahmagnani and you'll also be successful. See, this sage has already realized the truth. So he has no enmity in his mind. You see, that is how Stitha Pragya, a person of God, knows that everything is one. He doesn't care. He forgives. Just like Jesus also said, forgive them, they know not what they do. Right? So here also this sage said, don't worry about this. You know? So he said, he was not at all worried that he challenged him and all that thing. He said, never mind. So he said, you also become that. He said, okay, I will do that. And from that day onwards, you know, he took his crown, flung it out, and he started doing tapas, Vishwamitra. And he persisted doing this tapas again and again. But you know, the anger was still in him. It was burning inside. I must get even with the sage. That was the reason for his doing that. Not to become a Brahmagnani, but to show him what he can do. So when the motive was like that, he started doing this tapas again and again. But what happened? When somebody came along, you know, there was a person who was not supposed to go to heaven just like that in his body. But he was a king. He thought he could go to Sage Vasishtha and tell him, come on, move my body heavenwards so that I can go to heaven. Vasishtha was not there. So he went to the disciples. Disciples said, no, we can't do it. It's against the scripture. So he said, well, then I will ask Vishwamitra, because he knew that these people were fighting with each other, Vishwamitra and Vasishtha. So he asked Vishwamitra. And Vishwamitra said, okay, I will do it. Because he knows that Vasishtha didn't do it. You know, it's like a challenge. See the thought, the anger is still there. So he used all that power. And he could, you know, to take the sage, and he forced all the other sages to sit down and do all the mantras, to chant it there. Because they knew his power, he could do a lot of things. So against their will, they did all that. And they tried to send him up. When they tried to send him up, Indra said, nothing doing. You can't come into heaven because you're not allowed. And he pushed him back down. So all his power got drained out. He said, how dare you do that? He said, then I'll create a separate heaven for him. He said, okay, do what you want. And he created an intermediate heaven for this king. So this king sat in that place and all his power is gone. All the power that he had out of all the meditation and contemplation and tapas, all that gone. Just imagine. And then he left, and then he felt, what did I do? But it was too late. But he started again. He didn't leave. You know, this is Vishwamitra, persistence. He started again and again and again. And another time, he got married because one of the apsaras in heaven was dancing in front of him. And he got carried away and he married her and got a child also. So then, after this, again he realized, my goodness, what am I doing? And he ran away. He left home. He left his home. And then he went separately and he did his own tapas. And then he started and he never stopped. Then even Brahma and all those people were getting worried because they know his anger. But they know that he can do it. See, he will not stop till they confer on him the title of Brahma Rishi. See? But he went on persistently and finally they had to do it. And you know, when he got it, and when he goes and meets Vasishtha, all that anger, everything is gone. Why? Because they have become one. You know, when your mind is already on the self, when you know that you are the self and you are the self, what is there to talk about? What is there to worry about? What is there to fight about? There's nothing to fight. See, that is the thing. That is the persistence, you know. This shows the dharmic nature. You know, so all these tapas, you know, why, the reason I was talking about protect your penance, protect your jealous, don't be jealous, I mean, protect everything from jealousy and penance and your anger and all that stuff. I said all that because of this Vishwamitra story. And this Vishwamitra story tells you that. See, so when you when you don't, so when you get away from all this anger and all that, then all your penance and all whatever you do is saved up for the real thing. Okay, so here. Okay, so don't let jealousy destroy your sense of virtue and righteousness. Jealousy is like a fire inside oneself. It burns the torch bearer first and then consumes everybody else around him. See, be careful. Save dharma from jealousy. Knowledge is the one tool that makes us different from animals. With knowledge comes the aspect of pride and contempt. Watch for these two aspects. See, so but the pride that I know all these things, or contempt because someone else doesn't, can destroy us. You think you know everything and somebody else doesn't know. That also can destroy you. Okay, that is another thing. Contempt could come from the learned towards the less learned too. None of these factors should deter the resolve of the student. Being too proud of one's prowess curtails one's growth. Discouragement from someone's contempt also curtails the growth. So knowledge should be defended from the clutches of pride and contempt. Knowledge comes first, mind you. See, that means if you're subject to pride and contempt, that means you don't have the knowledge. See, today I was talking to the kids about knowledge and wisdom. That is wisdom. You can have knowledge, superficial knowledge and objective knowledge, but if you don't have the wisdom of where to use that knowledge and how to use that knowledge, it's no use of that knowledge, right? So this is the kind of thing. So perform all the action to be done for the betterment of the soul, free from ego and egocentricity, okay? And then abide in this. Now, you know, the final thing here, let me give you one more thing here. You know, Kabir is a great saint, Bhakta Kabir. You know what he said? He says that, you know, we have a grinding stone. You know, in India, we have this grinding stone, two stones, and it has a handle. And you put whatever you put in between those stones, and you grind. You grind it. Whatever you put in there gets ground. But if something is stuck in the center, it doesn't get ground. So Kabir said, you know, this, look at the grinding stones. He's saying, in between these two wheels, nothing stays. Like, except the ones that are in the center. So if you center yourself in God and let everything else go, you're fine. But if you look at the periphery and do that, you will be ground by the world. See, very nice Kabir's thing, you know. So the mithya world will let you go. But if you look at the Lord and center yourself in that, that's what happens, okay? So let us conclude here. And then you can ask some questions if you like. So, dharma protects the one who follows it. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. See, remember, we have something called four purusharthas. That's your pathway. Your spiritual pathway is dharma, artha, kama, moksha. That means you follow dharma. That means all your activities should be so that you relate to that state of being that you are. Right? All your activities should be like that. Artha means wealth. When you earn wealth, make sure that wealth is earned with this in mind. With the fact that I must earn it in such a way that I must not violate my divine nature. See, everything has dharma as the baseline. Kama means desires. Make sure your desires are also within that same parameter. If you have desires that are totally out of that change, that go against the divine spirit that you are, that violates that also. And moksha, that means, so if you take a dharma and you, when you're earning wealth, whether you have desires, when you follow dharma all the way, okay, then what happens? The ultimate thing is moksha. That means you realize the truth. Self-realization comes if you do that. Okay, so align, and then, so the next thing we said was, align your swadharma towards your dharma. That means whatever you do as a housewife, as a business person, as a policeman, as a fireman, whatever it is, whatever trade you're doing, do that meticulously and very, very, very well. Do it for God. Do it for the Gurudev or God, whatever it is. And when you do that, that really helps. That is aligning your swadharma in the direction of dharma. That is moving towards a state of being, right? And then think, act always in a dharmic way. Don't let fear, lust and anger deflect you from the path of dharma. And awareness in all activities is... See, you know, Gurudev always did that also. Presence. He always emphasized that. Be present in every action that you do. You know, look at the word present. What a beautiful thing it is. when you're in the present, there's no past, there's no future. So therefore, what are the things that normally stress you out? Things that are things of the past. Oh, this thing happened in the past, and then you have revenge and all those things. Or something is not happening in the future, what are you doing? But suppose you're present all the time. There's no past, there's no future. How can you have any stress? Isn't it? So center yourself in that. And look at this. The present alone is real. Why is that? Because even to discuss things in the past, you have to discuss it only in the present. Even to discuss things of the future, you have to discuss in the present. The present alone is real, really. Everything else is no use. So half the time our worry is because of the past or the future. But if you're so, that's why, you know, you must live. That's why, you know, every master said that. Live from moment to moment. Huh? Even Christ said, give us this day our daily bread. Not tomorrow, this day. Huh? And all our masters said that this moment, not only the day, moment. So everything is moment to moment. So when you do that, everything becomes fine, you know, because you're present. And when you're present, you're paying respect to the God that is you. That is the real you. Not in an egotistic way, but in the way that even this body doesn't exist, only that exists, see? That is shedding your ego completely. It's not like saying, I am God, I am God, I am God. No, it's like saying there is nothing but God. See the big difference in the way I'm looking at things, okay? All right. So if you have any questions, I'm done today. That Om, you know, I was telling you, the scripture says that if you take a needle and thread it through all the scriptures, this Om is that needle. That is how vital, that is how important and how great it is. That Om stands by a mantra by itself. Every single thing that I do in any ritual starts with an Om. Om Krishnaya Namaha, Om Ganeshaya Namaha, Om, 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 Om. Starts with Om. Look at that, it's amazing. And Lord Krishna also says that, you know, if the last thing that you do when you leave your body, if you're thinking of that Om, then you'll come directly to me. What a nice, it's a great invitation. Invitation from God. Okay. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamadachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Sri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.